Greetings. I am Shusara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shusara Kona Kumara. You are listening to Satsang on BBS Radio. Thank you so much for listening in tonight. I've got PLAN and Tim here with me tonight to help me talk to you. We're ready to get started. So take a nice deep breath and let me clear the space. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring past knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them, and I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Welcome back. It's always so good to be with you. I wish I could see the people who are listening in. We had a really lovely, intimate, lovely session here in Charlotte tonight, and it all centered around my coffee cup. I went out and bought a coffee cup. I saw it at TJ Maxx, this little $2 coffee cup, and it says, "Let it go." So I brought it to the office. There's a little heart on the inside of the cup. So when I look down through my water, I see this pretty little purple heart. And I brought it to the office to keep here so I can have my water, but as a nice little reminder for people. So we basically talked about this letting go thing during our session beforehand. And I'm wanting to carry that over with you on air tonight as well. Because it's a really beautiful directive, let it go. And it's something that people love to point to all the time. And people love to say that they, you know, work hard to do it, or they're getting good at doing it, or they're very good at doing it, or however they want to present it. But it's actually an incredibly challenging thing to do. And I'm going to ask PLAN, you're typing. Is that because you can't talk to us right now? Or can you talk to us?
Actually, I realized that I had the volume all the way down.
Oh, well, there you go. So hopefully we're good now. A little technical difficulty prior. Okay. So can you talk to, because you brought this up during session, so I'm going to have you talk to our listeners. I was just saying, you know, letting things go is a beautiful thought, and it's something that people attain to do. But where's the difficulty in actually being capable of doing it? Can you speak to that from your own personal experience?
What's hard is that unless you completely see through it, that there's always this little piece there that's either trying to create doubt or fear, and it's just there to try to keep you engaged.
And who stays engaged?
The personal self.
And who's trying to disengage?
The personal self.
I see where this is headed. And are you the personal self?
No.
No. And, you know, so even it's a very interesting thing, because on one level, to even say, you know, maybe it's the personal self that has to be let go of. Is that even possible?
No.
No. So why not?
The personal self can't let go. Like, it can't. It will always be there. It can't make that jump.
Correct. And so to even term it as, you know, the way I said it, that the personal self needs to be let go of, what are we pointing to? What we're pointing to is that there's some other thing holding the personal self in place that can then release the personal self. And is that accurate? Is that accurate? What do you think?
That there's something to release the personal self?
No, that there's something holding it that can then release it, let go of it.
No. Well, yeah, I want to say yes and no.
Who releases the personal self?
No one.
So is there anything holding the personal self in place?
No.
No. No. Oh, now this is, we find ourselves in a tricky place. You're telling me to let it go as if there's something to let go. And then when I can acknowledge on an intellectual level that there's nothing holding anything that needs to be let go, I can tell you that that's very accurate, but it will not be your experience. Oh, now we're back to square one. What do we do with that? Tricky. I was really glad that this all came up this week. It's actually very funny. I was watching an astrology video just a couple days ago, and in it, the guy doing the astrology literally brought that up. I bought this cup 2 days ago. It was two days ago, and I had bought that cup, and then I got an email notification for this particular astrologer that I get notified when he puts videos out, because a lot of his work is very much in alignment with what we do. So I love to see where the astrology is lining up with what I'm seeing going on with the collective, which, of course, it will, you know, all the time. And at the end, toward the end of the video, he said that like twice, let it go. Let it go. And I was like, oh, that's sweet. Just got that cup. That's fantastic. Because it's exactly what's going on, you know, astrologically, that all of this stuff is coming up. And that's the overriding directive, is just let it go. you know, whatever it is that you're really stuck on right now, the stuff that's coming in, it's from the worldly place. Boy, it's pressing its issue and it's really driving it home that you got to take care of this and you got to make this right and you got to fix it, or, you know, whatever it is. The universe is saying, dude, it's time to let it go. All right. It's time to let it go. And I have to remember, those of you who, you know, have kind of listened to me enough, you will understand that the way that I have to talk to you is multi-leveled. So I can give you a teaching, and then what I have to do is I have to come at it from multiple angles, because I don't know who's listening and I don't know who's capable of hearing what level of what I'm saying. So I need to make sure that I always tackle as many different angles as I can. And it's always of the utmost importance in my work to constantly bring the student or the seeker back to the place of the highest level of sight, you know, the highest light, capital L. Because that's where you're being challenged to see the world from the highest light, not from the level of the world. That's easy. Everyone can see from the level of the world. That's what you're all stuck in doing, right? And not even from the level of, you know, a more balanced place in the world, a personal self that's more balanced, even a personal self that's, you know, partially removed so that the observer can just be present. There's greater than that. And I have to constantly try to bring you, so you're not ready to see it from that level, but I have to keep bringing it in because consciousness always picks it up. You know, you're hearing everything. And so let it go is one of those teachings that's, there's a lot going on here. It's important at the level of the personal self, at the level of the ego, the psyche, the lower mind, whatever we want to call it right now. It is a very valid and valuable teaching. Let it go. Even more apropos, let it be. Right. There's a doer involved in that. It's an action kind of a thing. Remember, we're using language and language is polarized. So it makes it appear as though, you know, you are the one who takes the action, makes the choice, does the thing. In highest truth, that's not happening. There's only the one appearing as you, through you, as you. So the you that you think of as you doesn't exist anyway. And that identification with you deciding to let something go is just as fictional as you deciding you're going to hold on to it. Neither of them are really accurate. However, from the level of the psyche, the level of the personal self, the level of the identified ego, there is validity in the teaching, let it go. Why? Because to hold on to something, to be attached to it, also means that there is resistance. Attachment and resistance are two sides of the same coin. You know, you want to hold one, but that also means you want to push the other away. Or you don't want to hold the other. I want to hold one and let the other one go. And whichever one you're holding on to, you won't be able to see the other side because you're conscious of one and unconscious of the other. Well, you're all of it, right? So to bring your awareness to where you hold on to things in a way that does not serve you is very valuable, you know. From a purely psychological level, very, very valuable. Wherever you see that you get tripped up and you attach to something and you make it personal and you create a story around that you are intimately connected with, that doesn't serve you. The only thing that leads to is suffering. Suffering. And suffering the way the Buddha meant it, you know. There, remember, suffering does not equate to pain being a physical manifestation. suffering being a psychological one. And there can be pain without suffering. And there certainly can be suffering without pain. Because people all over the planet are suffering all the time. And why do you suffer? You suffer because you are in a place where everything that you believe to be true about yourself and your place in the world, and all the things that you think are right and wrong, and all the things that you think are good for you or bad for you, all of that stuff is, you know, it's the tether that keeps you bound to the world. All of it. All the things that you, I mean, really, look at that. You think something is right or wrong that will keep you stuck. Oh, that's hard. But Shasara, that's really hard. Yeah. Yeah. From the level of the personal self, it is. In fact, I would say that from the level of the personal self, it's impossible. Because the personal self is not capable of walking the middle path, is it? It can't. The personal self is polarized. At the level where the middle path is walked, there's no personal self anymore. Therefore, no one actually walks it. I saw that face. Put words to that for us, please.
I don't know. It just all made so much sense when you said that. It's just like, oh, because if you're walking it, you're doing something, right?
Yeah. And there's, and at the level of the middle path, the level of equanimity, there is no one. There is only the one, but no one. So can you walk the middle path? No. So why are we trying so hard to do it? That's the big question. But Shasara, it doesn't make any sense. Why do we try so hard to do it if it's unattainable? Well, that's a really good question. It's a really good question. And the answer is, it's necessary. So you can't take someone off the street who has no higher understandings whatsoever and who is completely functioning on an unconscious level. Now, I want to remind you, the personal self, the you think yourself to be, is unconscious. I don't know if that's the right way to word it. It's not conscious. It's not conscious. It's a program. Action, reaction, stimulus, reaction. It's a program, and that's all it does. There's no one behind it. Quote unquote, making it work. It's a cycle that just cycles. That's all it does. It just cycles. Identification just cycles. Downward states of mind, swing. Upward states of mind, swing. Downward states of mind, swing. Upward states of mind, swing. And it just, that's all it does. Over and over and over and over and over and over. It'd be like you were on a roller coaster. You ever see those like little kiddie roller coasters at a amusement park? And they just go around in a circle, basically, but they go up and down, up and down. So imagine you're sitting on a kiddie roller coaster, and when it's going up, you know, all the lights are on and all the happy music's playing. And then as soon as it goes down, it gets dark and it's scary, you know, and all the oogie boogies come out. And that's all you do back and forth. Up, bright lights, very fun, very fun. And then down and, ooh, scary, scary, scary. Get out. Up and down and up and down. And that's the personal self. That's all it can do. It's it. And within that, the program itself tries like anything to smooth it out. But it's impossible because the program is constructed out of polar opposites. That's the basis of the program, right? So if you look at it from that aspect, if the basis of the program, the formatting of the program is built around these two anchor points, right? Can the program itself that is constructed out of the anchor points of the program lead itself out of its own construct? Tim, would that be possible? He's my computer programmer. No, he shakes his head no. So program is based in these fundamental truths. Yeah, we could call it that. You go to create a program. You have these fundamental truths at the very basis, the bottom level of the program that everything is built on coming out of that. Can you utilize from that space anything that's created out of it in order to that could be capable of walking itself out of its own core program? No. Because it's created out of the construct. And that is the personal self. Can the personal self actually walk out of the polarity that it has been created out of? No. Can't. No. Which is why one of the biggest teachings that we repeat over and over and over again is that we aren't here to change anything. We're here to see through it. Because there is something greater than the program that is capable of seeing the program for what it is and not identifying with the program. And that would be the Christed you. The Christ itself, capital S, versus personal self, small s. This is really important. I hope that you can stick with me here because this is a big deal. This is why all the religions of the world don't bring people to enlightenment. This is why New Age teachings don't bring people to enlightenment. Because you're trying to utilize a construct that's fundamentally flawed as the thing that's going to bring liberation. And it can't happen. It's impossible. And there's a reason that the term awakening is used so much to refer to coming into the knowing of oneself as God, because that's exactly how it feels. It feels as though you've had this drape over your head and all of a sudden it got lifted, you know, and you hear that term too. The veils are lifted, because that's what it feels like. Or as if you just woke up from a dream where you look at it and you're like, oh my word, like, wow, I thought that was real. From within the level of the program, right, that is fundamentally flawed because the basis of it can't be accurate. There is no polarization. There isn't. And if the basis of it is inaccurate, that means all of it is inaccurate. But it's very seductive. It's a very complete package. It's a very well-programmed program, right? Kind of like if you watched the movie The Matrix, and there was the one scene where they're in that building and the black cat goes by twice, and it was a glitch in The Matrix, right? And Neo didn't understand why he saw the black cat twice. And everybody else understood what was going on. Those glitches don't happen very often, right? So this world is the same. and the way that the ego lives in its own construct, it's the same thing. It's so well programmed that it is nearly impossible to even see that it could be a program. And Tim spoke to this well yesterday. I was spending some time with Tim, and he was experiencing, I don't know if I'll word it the way you did. You didn't even know how to word it. The experience of I have this inner, like you don't even know how to put it to words, but there's this inner sense of maybe this isn't real or something's not right. You want to speak to it? Come here.
Yeah, the feeling was kind of like you're half asleep. And so if you're asleep, you have no concept that you're asleep. You know, you're just sleeping. But if you're in that in-between state of awake and sleeping, then you have some latent awareness that this isn't quite real, but it's only latent because you're not fully in the awakened state yet. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that. Mm-hmm. I was describing it.
Yeah. And that's very accurate, you know. And what he was also recognizing as we were talking was that there's this, you know, he experiences two voices, and you've got the one voice saying, like, what if it is a dream? And what if this is the path out, you know, or the way to wake up from the dream? And then, you know, also existing in the same space is the voice that goes, but it's not a dream. You're not dreaming. This is real. No, you're not sleeping. You're already awake, you know. And of course, that is the ego. It's playing all of it. It plays the doubter and the believer. It has to. The ego is polarized. So it plays both on everything, at everything, right? And so this is what consciousness does in its identification with the personal self. Is it like ping pongs? It's like watching a ping pong match back and forth and back and forth. And that's what it does. It constantly identifies between one side and the other side and then one side and the other side. Always searching for stability, you know, but constantly bouncing back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And that's a part of the initial struggle in doing dissolution work, especially really deep work, because you know you begin to have experiences that are starting to show you that this isn't real, you know. But then the mind will grab it, so the experience is that it's fully experiential, you know. It's like you own that because you just walked through it. You own that, and you experienced it, and within it you integrated it and actualized it, right? But then what mind will do is it'll take that and it'll create doubt around it. So that in the moment, right after something happens, where you've seen beyond, you know, the illusion, beyond this matrix of duality, in those moments immediately following it, there's this sense of, how could I have ever missed that? Oh my God, it's so simple. It's been here the whole time, you know, like, duh, right? The big light bulb goes off and it's like, but it's so simple. How could I not have seen that? Correct? Yes. But then, you know, depending on the experience and depending on where you're functioning from and what happens next and all that stuff, shortly thereafter, whether it be hours or days or weeks, however long you're capable of maintaining that level, the doubt comes. And boy, is it ever convincing. Because those moments, you know, don't stay present with you long. And then it turns into what? Then it's like recalled like a memory. And within that, it's not as palpable. It's not as strong. And what you really only have to hold on to is not the picture of the memory itself. It's the inner knowing of the impact that it made at the time. And that's knowing. not thinking. It's just knowing that you know that that was real. You know, kind of like people who have near-death experiences, yeah. They'll be pronounced legally dead, and they go into the light, and they see their loved ones, or they may see the Buddha or Jesus or whatever. And the stories are always the same. They're always like, they don't want to come back. They don't want to come back until they realize they need to, you know. But then once they're back here, everything has shifted for them. They can't see this world the same way after they've, quote unquote, died and come back into it, because they've seen something else that was more real. It impacted them on a fundamental level, so much stronger than anything that happens here, that you just don't forget it, right? So similar to that, any seeker who's doing dissolution work will come into those moments. They may not be as impactful as a near-death experience, right? Because it'll just be a fleeting thing. And then what you'll find is that at some point, doubt does come in and it goes, did I really have that experience? Did I just make that up? Like, no, I had to have made that up. Like, that was too cool. You know? Or that can't be real. I mean, look, this is the world. Like, that doesn't happen here. And all of these things are generated within the program for the express purpose of making sure that consciousness stays very attached to the program. Because as long as consciousness is attached to the program has life. If a tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? Or does it make a noise, right? If no one's there to hear it, does it make a noise? And similar to this, if no one's there giving credence to the story of the program, does the program even exist? Is it valid? It could run all day long, but it doesn't make it real. Right? So what's the seeker to do? So the seeker has to, you know, A, trust the guide who's telling them, no, your experience was accurate, and you need to trust your experience. Right. And they have to have faith that their guide, who has walked the path, can see what they can't, you know. And they have to put some faith in that okay, you're telling me that, you know, it really was real. And I can trust that. And that's really crucial. That's the part that's, you know, it's hard for people who don't have access to a guide really in form to go to when you have these experiences. It makes it a little more difficult because you really have to, you know, be self-empowered to the space where you know that it's true and you know that it's real and you are not going to let it go. And for a lot of people, that's very difficult. You know, I mean, the ego suffers from extremely low self-esteem. So it's not easy to hold that, oh, I just had a transcendent experience, you know. When the ego really is looking for reasons to belittle itself all the time. But it's really important. Because you holding on to your knowing that your experience can be trusted. Words can't be trusted. Actions can't be trusted necessarily. Anybody's words or actions don't necessarily mean anything, but your own experience is something completely different. And that's what you have, and that's what you have to hang on to. So that when all of the stuff from the world comes, like we call them, you know, in the Buddhist story, the demons of the world that are coming to tempt you, tempt consciousness into the identification with the stories that the demons represent. When that happens, you'll have the strength to see through it, to see through it, not to change it, not to make it go away. Don't tempt me like that. You know, no, no, no. You're not there to make it stop. You're there just to see through it so that you can laugh in the face of the demon rather than trying to fight it or hide from it, to just laugh and love it for what it is. And that, to me, is what Let It Be represents. To be in the space of equanimity with what is in all of its variation here in the world. Because here in the world, everything is represented on the sliding scale from evil to divine. It's all represented. And bad to good, everything is here. And the thing that you aren't here to do is to keep yourself polarized on any one side of anything. Can you embrace the devil as much as you would embrace God? Oh, that's a hard one. No, run from it. Run from it. Very scary, very scary. And what if I told you that it's all love? It's all love. All of it. And it's only your own perception that's making it appear to be anything other than that. But that perception's wrong. Consciousness does a very cool thing when you're going through really deep work. It starts to present itself to you in from levels of the unconscious during your dream time. And so it's not uncommon for seekers to end up having nightmares, you know, where really horrendous things are happening. A lot of times you're the center of the horrendous things that are happening, and you'll have dreams where you're fighting some evil opponent, you know, fight. I mean, like really tearing them to shreds. Like you just want to kill them, right? Or you'll have dreams where something evil comes and you can't get away fast enough and it's following you and you're trying every which way and it's always one step behind you and you're, you know, in the dream, you're just in that state of utter panic that it's about to get you, you know. And what consciousness is presenting in all of that is the polarization that you're holding in place and it's bringing you the other side, you know, because you hold this thing of what is good and what is bad and that I have to run from what is bad or I have to kill it. Kill it, make it stop, you know. And what if the actual answer is just to let it be? What if it's just to love it for what it is? And I have my own experience of these dreams, and I know of others who have had theirs. And there's one person in particular I'm thinking of, because when she spoke about her experience, I was like, wow, that's really beautiful, because I had this, like the same one, you know. The story within the dream was slightly different, but it was the same thing. And in both situations, you know, what presented was basically what in some circles they'd call like the shadow self, you know, which a lot of you probably understand that terminology. So it's the polarized you, the one that you don't want to think of as you, the one who will present as the dark you, you know, the Darth Vader you, the Voldemort you, right? And however that presents. And then so for me in my dream state, she was a dark, like, witch. I mean, she was actually like very, she was all dressed in black, jet black, long, stringy kind of hair. Scary as anything. You know, not like warty, like an ugly witch. She was more like one of those really cool looking witches, but just scary. Like Helena Bonham Carter plays a beautiful, really scary witch. It was like that, right? And she was wanting to get me. And I had several very vivid experiences in my dream state with this particular woman. And I wasn't cognizant the first two or three times of who she was in the dream. So I was afraid of her. And in one of the dreams, I went into the state of self-righteous behavior where I hated her and I was... I literally flipped her off in my dream. Kind of like, go to hell. It was that kind of thing. And I had another experience with her where she just petrified me. Oh, just petrified me. I was just so scared, you know, so scared. She kept coming back. It was like every time I was in this certain room, and then every time the clock would strike whatever, she would appear, you know, and there wasn't anything I could do to stop it. And she said that to me, "You think you're going to get rid of me? There's nothing you can do to stop me." And that was terrifying, you know. I mean, really, if you place yourself in that spot, that's terrifying. And then I had an experience with her where she showed up in all her glory, all her scary, terrifying glory, and got right in my face and screamed. I mean, in my face, and just opened her mouth and the scariest, nastiest scream, just, wah! You know, right in my face. Like she wanted to just engulf me in her evil, you know. And I stood there and watched her. And after she was done screaming, I looked at her and I felt my heart. I literally, in the dream, I felt my heart. And I just looked at her and I said, "I love you." And she looked at me and we connected, like our eyes just connected. And she disappeared. Just poof, gone. Because at that point, even in the dream state, I knew who she was. She was me. She was me. She was all the things about me that I didn't want to accept, and all the things about me I was trying to run away from and that I was trying to hide from, and the things, the choices I had made along the way that I was ashamed of, and other choices I'd made along the way that I hurt other people and didn't want to look at. She was all of it. She was all those things that I was trying to push away, bury, kill, deny that it existed, all of it. And all she needed was recognition that she existed, but that she existed from a place where it's okay. Whoever you are, I love you. You're okay. And then whatever the energy was or the force was that held her in place, it was gone. Because the polarization there had been surrendered. It had been let go of. And so there was nothing that made her real anymore. She's just gone. And when you do your work, this is what's happening. And it's beautiful that in the dream state, you can have experiences where you are doing the work in your dreams. You are. The dream, your dreams are created by the unconscious anyway. So everything that's going, and this is Jungian work. So anything that's going on in the dream state, your consciousness has very specifically placed it there. Every single thing, everything has a meaning, and you know what all of it means. So if you can get in on that level, you can go into back after the dream, and you can actually go back in and ask certain things. You know, why are you here? What do you represent? It's kind of a meditation. And your own consciousness created it. So the answers are there. You just have to go in and pull them out, right? So there literally becomes a point in your own work where you're doing very deep work, somewhat consciously in the dream state. Not dissimilar to lucid dreaming, but far more impactful. It's not like I want to have a lucid dream because I want to go, you know, fly. So I'm going to train myself to lucid dream so I can go have great experiences. That's not what's going on here. You'll be aware that you're still you and that you're in the dream state, but things will come up and you have the opportunity to carry your understandings into the dream state. That's powerful work. You get to that point, that means that you have integrated the understandings to a certain degree so that it enables you to still function from that level even when you're not conscious. And I hope that you're hearing me and how powerful that actually is. That even on an unconscious level, the understandings are coming through and you're functioning from that place. It's really amazing. And so this whole let it go thing, let it be thing, is really important. Because without a sense of needing to do it for me, you know, even if it's just because right now in the world you just want a greater sense of peace or a sense of purpose or a sense of satisfaction or happiness or whatever you want to call it, you know, yeah, that's polarized, but it's not without its value. And for a time, it has value. It's a very interesting thing. And the way the mind is just quite interesting. It's very difficult to take someone from a place of extremely low self-esteem and throw them right into dissolution work, right? They already hate themselves so much to begin with that to then go in and tear it down more could be too much, right? So literally, on a psychological level, there's a truth to people needing to move to from a psychological place, move to a space where they experience greater self-esteem first, before then you turn around and tear it down, which seems a little crazy, but, you know, it does seem crazy. But it all plays out here. Because it takes strength to go through what you have to go through to dissolve the sense of identification that's happening. You know, the question may come, someone might be listening and go, well, you know, so what's the big deal? Like, why do I want to dissolve the personal self anyway? What's that all about? You know? And I probably should speak to that because if you don't know my work and don't know what we do, it can seem so out there that, you know, like it doesn't have some kind of practical application, and it couldn't be further from the truth. The whole point is that the personal self is not capable of functioning from the space of the heart. It is impossible to be in the heart from the level of the ego. Impossible. The two cannot exist in the same space. And so from an ego level, if that's where you're functioning from, even when you think you're in your heart, you actually aren't, because the mind is extremely good at pretending to be the heart to boot. Now, that's not to say that you don't ever have experiences when you are in the heart. I'm not trying to take that away from anybody. But I will say that the mind can be extremely deceptive and can get you to believe a lot of things are heartfelt when they really aren't. And every one of my students can speak to that on a very personal level, that they've seen that in their own lives. So the purpose of doing, you know, very deep work to see through the story of you is so that you can actually begin to live your life consciously. The program just is not conscious. Remember, it's not conscious. And even though you seem to be here and you seem to be awake and you seem to be making choices and living a life, it's not conscious until you're in your heart. And when you're in your heart, now you can live, you know, because that's what you are. You are life. God is life. You are that. But it will not be experienced from the level of the personal self. And so, you know, for no other reason, if someone's called to find the truth, that's the why behind it, you know. So for some, it's, oh, I want to ascend. And for some, it's, I want to, you know myself to be God. And for some, it's enlightenment, whatever it is. You know what? For nothing else, do it so you can love. So you can love unconditionally. Because that's the only place unconditional love exists, is in the heart. In your God self. That's it. And if you love in the world, then you are an agent of change in the world. And you no longer exist by the rules of the world. You may appear to exist in it, but it's no longer real for you. And that's when life becomes truly magical and so worth the work. So on that note, I picked a very special song for tonight that I think is very much in alignment with what we just spoke about. So I hope you enjoy your meditation tonight, and we will be back with you next Thursday for Satsang. We love you. Good night.
Let it be.